When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As tensions heighten in the Russian military standoff with Ukraine, how the Biden administration is trying to head off the conflict.
The Biden administration has worked the diplomatic channels very closely and intensively, a lot of phone calls, a lot of visits. There is still some contrast between where the U.S. and some allies are in terms of a possible invasion.
And why Tesla says it's being harassed by securities regulators. Plus, how Uber riders can now count their lucky and unlucky stars. It's Thursday, February 17th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Violence escalated in eastern Ukraine today, with Russian-backed separatists and Ukrainian authorities each accusing the other of ceasefire violations. The Ukrainian army and local residents say a kindergarten and a school in Ukrainian-held towns were hit with mortar shells. No fatalities were reported. Russia has accused Ukraine's military of pursuing a genocide in the separatist Donbas region, according to documents reviewed by The Wall Street Journal. The accusations, which Russia has made previously and Ukraine has denied, have been dismissed by Western officials. Meanwhile, Russia told the U.S. today that it might resort to military technical measures if it didn't receive binding security assurances, including that Ukraine will not be admitted to NATO. At a meeting of the United Nations Security Council, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken repeated U.S. concerns that Russia could fabricate a provocation and use it as a pretext for a military attack in the coming days.
Russian media has already begun to spread some of these false alarms and claims to maximize public outrage, to lay the groundwork for an invented justification for war. Today, that drumbeat has only intensified in Russia's state-controlled media.
Blinken proposed a diplomatic meeting next week and challenged Russia's deputy foreign minister, who is also at the UN, to commit to de-escalation.
The Russian government can announce today, with no qualification, equivocation, or deflection, that Russia will not invade Ukraine. State it clearly, state it plainly to the world, and then demonstrate it by sending your troops, your tanks, your planes, back to their barracks and hangars, and sending your diplomats to the negotiating table. In the coming days, the world will remember that commitment, or the refusal to make it.
Russia has not responded to Blinken's proposal, but Moscow has insisted in the past that it will not invade Ukraine. Coming up later in the show, we'll talk more about the Biden administration's push for diplomacy and the challenges it faces. U.S. stocks fell on the intensifying geopolitical tensions. The Dow suffered its worst day of the year, dropping 622 points, or 1.8%. The S&P 500 was down more than 2%, and the Nasdaq fell 2.9%. Adding to the volatility for investors are rising inflation and the Federal Reserve signals that it plans to begin raising interest rates next month. Lawyers for Tesla say that the company and CEO Elon Musk are being harassed by the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's according to a letter filed with a federal judge today. Our financial enforcement reporter Dave Michael says the flare-up dates back to a 2018 regulatory settlement that sought to restrict Musk's use of social media after he tweeted that he planned to take Tesla private.
Tesla and Elon Musk agreed to pay a $40 million combined penalty and to have a policy that would kind of supervise some of Elon Musk's tweets that were material to Tesla shareholders. And basically, Tesla now says the SEC is harassing the company and Elon over its compliance with this Twitter supervision order. And they are telling the judge in the case that the SEC is being unreasonable, and also that the SEC has sort of fallen down on its own responsibility, which was to distribute those fine monies to shareholders who were harmed by Elon's tweets back in 2018.
Meanwhile, Musk was condemned today by the American Jewish Committee and the Auschwitz Memorial for tweeting and then deleting a meme comparing Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to Hitler. The tweet came in response to a CoinDesk article about the Canadian government sanctioning dozens of cryptocurrency wallets tied to funding for trucker protests. Neither Tesla nor a representative for Trudeau responded to requests for comment. A New York judge has ordered former President Donald Trump and two of his adult children, Ivanka and Donald Jr., to comply with subpoenas issued by the state attorney general's office to testify under oath. In asking the judge to enforce the subpoenas, the AG's office said it had uncovered evidence that Trump and his company, the Trump Organization, had falsely valued assets to get loans, insurance coverage, and tax deductions. The Trumps have disputed the allegations. Lawyers for the Trumps said they will likely appeal. Walmart reported stronger sales over the holiday shopping season and said it is largely absorbing higher costs. Comparable sales rose 5.6% in the quarter ending January 28th. Walmart's U.S. business benefited from stocked shelves and stronger foot traffic. The company swung to a profit of $3.56 billion. Executives say they're continuing to build out their e-commerce business, which saw slower growth this quarter than earlier in the pandemic, and that they aim to have 200 million products on the company site by the end of the year. And mortgage rates are closing in on 4%, hitting their highest level in almost 3 years. That could further strain affordability in a market where prices have risen steeply. The average 30-year fixed-rate loan was 3.92%, according to mortgage finance giant Freddie Mac, the highest level since May of 2019. Expectations that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates several times this year to control inflation are driving up mortgage rates, which are closely tied to the 10-year U.S. Treasury. Coming up, will diplomacy prevail in de-escalating tensions between Russia and the West?
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
As we reported earlier in the show, the U.S. and its allies continue to push for diplomacy to resolve Russia's escalating military standoff with Ukraine. Diplomatic mistakes, including tensions with some longtime allies, dogged President Biden's first year in office. Now he's relying on the alliance building that's marked his long career in Washington. The question is, will it pay off to address the current crisis? Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal White House and national security reporter Gordon Lubold. Hi, Gordon. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Gordon, President Biden and NATO allies have been pushing for diplomacy with Russia in the hopes of de-escalating tensions. Can you talk more about how the administration has been responding to this crisis and how European allies are viewing the U.S. approach right now?
The administration has focused repeatedly on diplomacy as the best way to get through this crisis. Officials within the administration started to see, even as early as last fall, these indications that Russian military was amassing along the Ukrainian border and that there was some reason for concern. I think they looked at the initial assessments and there was some debate, and then they settled and realized that there is actually something happening here. So then they started wargaming contingency plans, how to best confront this, kind of with a guiding principle that, you know, American forces were not going to be involved inside Ukraine, but the diplomacy could carry it. And so really started feverishly meeting with NATO allies, with other friends, and communicating and sharing intelligence to the degree that they could help allies really kind of get on board with where the U.S. and where the NATO alliance was on the issue.
The U.S. and its allies have warned that Russia could launch a false flag operation, which would be using fake provocations to justify an attack of Ukraine. How are world leaders handling that possibility?
I think their best defense is to try to expose what they believe Mr. Putin could or would do. And so for now, several weeks, the U.S. and allies, the Brits in particular, have been trying to expose this by declassifying what would otherwise be pretty highly classified intelligence to the degree to which some of this information can be shared with allies, but also with the American public in this case and others, to explain what exactly is in Mr. Putin's playbook.
So while the Biden administration is pursuing this path to diplomacy, how might increasing tensions and even violence change that strategy?
Well, it's interesting because there are some divisions here. I mean, on many levels, the Biden administration has worked the diplomatic channels very closely and intensively, a lot of phone calls, a lot of visits. There is still some contrast between where the U.S. and some allies are in terms of a possible invasion and some other countries. Germany is one example, France is another, who do not think that this is as urgent or as imminent a threat. And the Ukrainians themselves, by the way, are also not convinced that Putin is really going to invade, or at least right now. And so they've been trying to work these different avenues to at least get everybody kind of roughly on the same page. But, you know, as this thing unfolds, we'll see kind of whatever rifts may occur as a result of these kind of divisions over the intelligence.
Gordon, the Biden administration came into office prioritizing strengthening relationships with its allies, but experts point to key foreign policy missteps in Biden's first year in office that set those efforts back, including the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. What lessons were learned there, and how is the administration now applying those lessons to Russia?
What happened with Afghanistan, what happened with some other deals over the last several months, were that some allies did feel left out, even somewhat abandoned. Now, the Biden administration is very sensitive on this point. Of course, you know, and listeners know that President Biden spent 8 years in the Obama White House as vice president. He was kind of one of the point people on many foreign policy issues at the time. He also spent years in the Senate steeped in foreign policy issues at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So this is a president who's supposed to know foreign policy and does, in fairness, but some of these missteps, the Afghanistan one is probably the most prominent. You know, again, allies probably disagreed with some of the decisions that the president made at the time about withdrawing, but then that aside felt that they were left out on some of the decision-making and some of the way that decision unfolded. There's another a deal between Australia, the U.S., and Great Britain on to kind of help confront China in the Indo-Pacific that France was left out of. It's a long story, but the point was is that France did not feel like it was kept in the loop on that deal either, which affected them. And so we are seeing, I think, of a deliberate, almost obsessive compulsion to communicate with allies on Ukraine, share intelligence, and keep them abreast of where the administration is. And so far, I think the Biden administration has received and probably deserves high marks for that sharing.
What else do you think is guiding the Biden administration's approach to Russia right now?
The central theme here is that, you know, President Biden, coming after 4 years of President Trump, kind of got the memo that, you know, Americans are not concerned with some of these overseas issues. As somebody who covers them a lot, you know, I think they're hard to ignore, but in trying to manage these conflicts overseas and these other issues has kind of created a red line about keeping American forces out. In this case, as they've telegraphed repeatedly, that, you know, no U.S. forces will go into Ukraine, certainly not to fight the Russians. But there's a side issue here, which is tens of thousands of Americans who are in Ukraine who may not get out and may have to flee. The Biden administration has been very clear that it will not send American forces in to go help evacuate these Americans. So, I mean, I think if there's a guiding principle, it's we are not going to get involved in conflict overseas with American forces, certainly, and, you know, diplomacy is going to win the day. What we don't know is if that will carry the day or not.
That's Wall Street Journal White House and national security reporter Gordon Lubold. Gordon, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And finally, Uber drivers aren't the only ones who get rated on the five-star scale. They also give their passengers stars, from glowing fives to embarrassing ones, for not putting on a seatbelt, slamming the car door, or leaving the backseat a mess. This week, Uber released a new way for users to see how they scored on their last 500 trips. Our personal tech reporter, Dalvin Brown, says the new feature is a way to encourage better driver-passenger interactions.
Uber says that this is all in the name of privacy and transparency, and that if you know more about how the company is collecting those ratings, you are just a more informed rider overall. You know how your experience within the Uber impacts your overall rider ratings. And then in turn, maybe you're a bit more respectful or thoughtful the next time you enter an Uber. Maybe you remember to put on your seatbelt so that you don't get your score docked.
Ratings information isn't made available in real time, and there's no way to know which driver gave you that one-star review for safety reasons. That's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.